Welcome. Let us look at the stars for a moment. The sun will move tomorrow according to Vedic astrological calculation. It would not be the same with the Western calculation. The planets move on or about the middle of each month, not on the 21st or 22nd. And tomorrow the sun will move out of Gemini and into Cancer, according to Vedic. Cancer is a water sign. The sun is a fire planet. So Cancer is not his favorite spot. Fire and water. Cancer, although, is a very wonderful sign, because Cancer is all about the heart. It's all about the heart energy, gentleness, compassion, nurturing, love, understanding, perception, intuition, the ability to read others, the ability to understand what it is people need and be able to provide it for them. So it's the universal mothering type of influence. So that's where the sun's going to be for the coming month. I guess from that point of view, if you would like to embark on projects that require such behavior and that kind of response, then that would be a good time to embark on such projects. It's interesting at the same time because right now in the sky, Venus is also in Cancer, and Ketu, the south node of the moon, is also in Cancer. So we'll have the three of them together there. Venus is all about love and compassion and beauty and creative expression, artistic expression. So Venus and the sun together in Cancer will amplify that significantly more. So not only is it a good time to embark on projects that would allow us to be more compassionate in the world around us, but if they could somehow create more beauty and enrich the beauty in our lives on whatever level you may experience that beauty. So that's also available. Now, with Ketu there, Ketu is the planet that can deliver a fairly significant degree of mysticism. Ketu can blow open the third eye. So it's really a month where great vision could take place. Emotional shift, a spiritual shift, catharsis, epiphany, revelation, realization. So if you want to work toward that in a concentrated manner in this month, then it would lend itself to that especially well. The sun represents governments and people in positions of power and authority. Sun and Venus would enhance that for those people, but not Ketu. Quite the opposite. So heads may roll this month. There may be somebody in a position of authority in the world. Could be locally here. It can be nationally, internationally. Who knows? And we could see somebody of great power and position fall be brought down, be asked to step down this month. We're not being that specific here, obviously. We're being very general. That can be determined, if you'd like to research that, by doing the personal birth chart of any world leader and or doing the birth chart of the country or the yearly chart of the country. These things can be researched and to some extent determined. So that's what's coming up this month. I think the sun moves somewhere like 3 something tomorrow morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. It's actually, it says in the Vedas that when the sun moves, it's called the Sankranti, moves from one sign to another, that it really stirs things up magnetically, electromagnetically. And it's not the best day to plan a lot of activity, especially 12 hours on either side of the sun's movement. So here we are, it's 8:20 in the evening, so we are within the 12-hour period right now, going up to the time the sun will move, and then 12 hours afterwards. This time is best used for meditation and prayer, contemplation, yoga, mantra, japa. This is the best thing to do during this period. So here we are, right on time. We couldn't have planned it better. We didn't even plan it. Here we are. Okay. No, no, no. It could be anytime. Anytime of the day or night. Just happens to be this time. All right, so I got it in my head this week that we talk about creation theories. Creation theory is very popular in the modern world. And the less they involve God, the better they like them. It seems that is the direction that it's going in. In fact, in some places in the United States, they want to take all of the creation theories to do with God out of the books and just have our friend Darwin and his scientists' friends to describe to us the reality of creation based on mental speculation and no proof. So I'm not going to get into this and argue all these points. I'm just going to present this very simply, but I'm going to obviously focus on the Vedic version because I want you to understand where you fit in to the scheme of things. I guess I will preface my statements by saying if we go to grammar school, elementary school, they will teach some arithmetic, which is very valuable. And when you're a 12-year-old, you might think you know quite a bit about arithmetic. And then you will go to high school, secondary school, and then they will teach you algebra and trigonometry and geometry. And then you'll see that arithmetic, yeah, that's something, but this is far more expansive. It requires a much greater brain capacity to understand algebra and trigonometry and geometry. And by the way, I didn't do well in those subjects at all. Then you can go on to university and you can study calculus and physics and quantum mechanics, etc. And then you'll really understand numbers in a whole other level of reality, way beyond 1 and 1 is 2. And I suppose we can go on and on and on. Why not? You know. So that's how I'm looking at the Big Bang, the Big Bang theory. Well, first of all, it's not a reality. 1 and 1 is 2 is a reality. The Big Bang theory is speculation. Well, it could have happened like this, it could have happened like that. We think it may be this, based on the amount of hydrogen in the atmosphere at this time, we think this is what happened. Well, fair enough. It's good to use your creative intelligence. For something to explode, and all of this to nicely appear, and all of these planets to spin through space and never collide in this harmonious pattern. And this just happens by happenstance. It just somehow exploded and it all happened. Well, if we can't prove it, we could test that theory. So why don't we say you want to start a business. Take all the things you need for your business. Our friend Mark Condea, he is in a telephone phones business. Let's get all the pieces. We need all the phones, all the different, microchips, all this. And we'll take them up in an airplane. We'll explode them all. It all comes down as a nice phone store. In the right place. The counter and cash register. The lights are working. Nice adverts like this. Yeah. Boom. There it is.
It's worth a try.
It's worth a try. See if it works. Try that with anything. Yeah. And please report back. And tell us how well it's worked for you. It's utter nonsense. It is complete and utter nonsense. Unless you can prove. If you can prove it to me, I will surrender. Okay, Big Bang. That's that. Less than kindergarten theory. Now in the Bible at least gives God some credit. The Bible says God has created all life. Created, let there be light, and there was day, there was night, there were the waters, there was the earth, and etc. And 6 days later, it was done, he saw it, said it was good. And on the seventh day he rested. Holy day, Sabbath day. That's more or less it. And then comes Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel. Okay. I'm not going to argue that theory. It's just a fairly basic skeletal structure of creation theory. Not theory. It's God's word, according to the Bible. Now we'll look at the Vedic version. Well, of course, we've spoken many times about some of the things that I'm going to touch on here. And I've printed out a few pictures to help us to understand. The material creation, according to the Vedas, is one quarter of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is three quarters of the total creation, although it's not limited. It's not like it has walls, but it's three quarters. The material creation is one quarter. And the material creation consists of we entities, conditioned souls, subject to birth, death, old age, disease. So in order for the material creation to take place, God must come down. This is as it's explained in the Vedas. When God comes into the material creation, he is any aspect of a God coming down into the material energy is called avatar. Avatar. One who descends. Tara comes from tre, which means to move across, and ava means to come down. It's not a video game. Avatar. And all the rest, they've attributed avatar so many things these days. And one thing I've heard repeatedly is, I'll meet somebody who's a little bit involved in spirituality, and they tell me, oh, you need to go see this lady. She's an avatar. And I go, really? So she's God incarnate. Maybe. Maybe not, but my point is, you know, a quarter of the world's avatars these days. Which I think is an exaggeration. The first descent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Purusha incarnation. And that Purusha incarnation is known as Karnadakshayi Vishnu or Mahavishnu. Have you ever heard of Mahavishnu? Vishnu is God. Maha means great. It's the first expansion of God in the material realm. So God comes into the material realm, and within the confines of material energy, he creates an ocean that is called the Karna Ocean. And he lays down. This is actually Garbhadak Ocean. I shouldn't show you that one. He lays down on the ocean. That's Vishnu there. He holds the Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. And he lays down on his serpent couch. Sheshanaga, thousand-headed serpent. And he goes into Yoga Nidra, mystic sleep. And he dreams what? The creation. How do you bring things into being in your life? What is the first thing you do? You think about it. The idea comes, and then you begin to think about it. You dream it. You visualize it. Don't you? And from mind, you put it down into matter, and you impregnate matter with your mind. And your mind is creative potency. Yeah? Srishti. Guess where we got that from? That's how God does it. This is the spiritual world. There is the material world. Now, we're going to ignore the spiritual world for now. There is Mahavishnu. He goes into this space, lies down on the ocean that he creates, and he goes into this mystic sleep. Okay? Yoga Nidra. He breathes out. And what happens? Through his pores come Hiranyagarbha, anda, golden bubbles. Millions of them. What are they? Universes. How many? Let's go down to British Beach. Count the sand. Count the grains of sand. Report back to me. Then we'll have some idea about how many universes are coming out of the pores of the Godhead. Yeah? Step one. That's step one. Breathe out. Because once he breathes in, it's gone. Gone. It all goes back into the body of Mahavishnu. Wrap your mind around that one now. So, what should we surmise Mahavishnu is doing at this moment? Breathing out. Because here we are, just as well. Just as well. Because here we all are. Because if you were breathing in, we would be what? Inside his body in a state of suspended animation, dormancy. Would we be dead? No, we're souls. The souls die, souls don't die. Bodies die. Bodies, not souls. We would be dormant, and now we are manifest. Yeah. Exciting, eh? The way he does it. Then what did he do? Step two. He goes inside each universe. And there, the universes are represented by the golden bubbles. And this one picture is the snapshot of one universe. He duplicates himself again as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu and goes into each and every universe. How does he do this? We start with one candle. That is the source of the Godhead. In this case, Mahavishnu. Now we take, here's the one candle, original. We take this candle, what do? We light it from the original candle, we put it down. Now we have two candles. We light another, we light another, we light another, and so we go. How many candles can we light? There's no limit. Is there any limit? There's no limit. What's the difference? They're all the same. Qualitatively, they're the same. You've got wax, you've got wick, you've got fire. Except one of them is the original. One is the original. That's Mahavishnu. So the Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. What does that all that big long word mean? It means this. Shayi means the guy who lays on Udaka, ocean. Because inside he goes inside each universe, he creates another ocean at the bottom. He likes oceans. And he lies on his serpent couch again. This one this time. On the ocean. Yeah? And Garbha means womb. Womb. That's a Garbha. And what does he do there? Breathe? No? He again goes into Yoga Nidra. And he dreams the next phase of creation. So what does he do? As he dreams, he wants somebody to come and create everything. Because he likes reclining on the couch. And out from his navel comes an umbilicus. The umbilical cord. You heard of it? You were all attached to it. Everybody at the umbilical cord. What's missing is the lotus flower. No offense, maybe some of you had the lotus flower. I don't know. The lotus flower comes out, and this guy appears on top of the lotus flower. Who is this? Brahma. Brahma. His job is to create the diversity in the material universe. Is that a big job? Oh yes, that is a big job. Now so far we talked about only Vishnu. Now Brahma comes. Brahma is not God. He is not Vishnu Tattva. He is Jiva Tattva. What does that mean? You could either be Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, or matter, material energy, Prakriti. Material energy, inert matter, not alive. When Jiva, a soul, a spirit enters into it, comes alive, it gets animated. How do you know if something's alive or not? By the presence of spirit. How do you know if something has a spirit or not? By the presence of consciousness. We said that last week. Here's somebody. They're lying there, dead. Well, all the organs are there. Pancreas is there. Heart is there. Lungs are there. Everything's there. What's the difference? Spirit, soul. It's gone. It's gone away. So no matter how much you love this person is gone. Only the body won't last very long. So, Jiva means a living entity who can become covered over or illusioned by matter, by material energy. Vishnu, or God, cannot become covered over or illusioned by material energy. By definition, that's God. You see the difference? So Brahma is a position that can be assumed by a regular jiva, an average person. Well, I shouldn't say an average person. You'd have to be a very accomplished soul. But this position is open. You can apply. If you like, you can apply for this position. And you would be theoretically the most powerful jiva in the entire universe. But you'd have a lot of responsibility. Lots. So, Brahma awakens on this lotus flower. It's not quite like this because everything is dark. What does he see? He sees darkness everywhere. Does he see the lotus flower? Well, maybe he sees that. I don't know. He doesn't see the umbilicus. He does not see Vishnu thousands of miles below him. And he receives the impetus from within, and or he hears that he hears two syllables. Tapa. Tapa. Do penance. Meditate. That's what he realizes. Know yourself. Figure out who you are and what your job is. Even Brahma, the creator of the universe, comes in not knowing what he's supposed to do. Who does that remind you of? All of us. Now, well, if I were him, at least I know I'm supposed to create the world. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Not right away. So he has to undergo penance, austerity. He has to qualify himself by meditation, by understanding who he is and what his mission in life is, what his purpose in life is. And this is one of the things that most of us struggle with, no? So then he realizes over time, I don't know how many thousands of years he meditates, and goes, oh, I'm to create. And then he begins. And he creates all the diversity in the universe. That's his job. Interesting creation theory, is it not? When the first Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, glances over the material energy, material nature becomes agitated and Mahavishnu thus impregnates matter with living entities. In other words, he impregnates all of this static material energy with spirit. But the spirit has no form. Right? It is for Brahma to create all the forms that can, the spirit can use to animate itself. All the species. How many species of life are there according to Vedic understanding? 8,400,000 only in the universe. Simply by the glance of Mahavishnu, consciousness is created. That's how potent God is. You know? According to the Bible, Jesus Christ used to be like this as well. He could create things immediately. He could heal the sick, raise people from the dead, increase the loaves and the fishes at the wedding feast, you know.
Does it not say that Brahma created in 7 days?
No.
No?
Not that I know of. Well, maybe he did and I don't know about it. It's entirely possible. And this consciousness is known as the Mahatattva, the great truth. The predominating deity of the Mahatattva is named Vasudeva. This created consciousness is then divided into three departmental activities according to the three gunas. Triguna. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. The mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, or the mode of contentment, desire, and delusion. Everybody in all of creation falls under the influence of these modes. Usually a mixture of the modes. Right? Humans are Rajas. Humans live in the middle area of creation, are Rajas. Mostly. They're full of desires. The gods, demigods, devas, in Christianity we say angels, archangels. They live up there in the higher planets, svarga. They are largely in the mode of sattva, goodness. Down below, the asuras, rakshasas, mischief makers, devils, they are largely in the mode of ignorance. They live in the lower planets. Can we find people like this here? Oh yes. Can we find devas here, or people who are like devas, enlightened souls here? Yes, we can. So you can find them anywhere, right? But there's a predominance of ignorance down here, passion here, or desire, and contentment, or a very high level of spirituality up here. Consciousness in the mode of material passion, or rajas, produces intelligence. Sattva produces consciousness. Rajas produces intelligence, and tamas produces, here it says, the ether, the sky, and the sense of hearing. this cosmic manifestation, the entire manifestation, is a combination of all these three modes called gunas. Guna means like quality. And in this way, innumerable universes are created. No one can count the number of universes. So when you read an account like this, and then you hear people who are earth people who actually believe that they're the only people, this is the only planet where there's somebody living in all the universe, it's sort of laughable. It shows you a certain degree of self-importance. These innumerable universes are produced from the pores of Mahavishnu's body. As innumerable particles of dust pass through the tiny holes in a screen, similarly from the pores of Mahavishnu's body, innumerable universes emanate. As he breathes out, innumerable universes are produced. As he inhales, they are annihilated or withdrawn. All of the energies of the Mahavishnu are spiritual. They have nothing to do with material energy. You cannot say that God is material because he enters into the spiritual nature and creates life. No, that does not make him material. Nor is he touched or influenced by these lower material qualities. That's the definition of God. If he were influenced by it, he wouldn't be God. In the Brahma Sanghita, which is a book spoken by Brahma, it is stated that the predominating deity of each universe is Brahma, the creator. Brahma lives, what's his lifespan? One breath of Mahavishnu. That's his lifespan. And our lifespan? Significantly less than that. Way less. Thus, Mahavishnu is the original supersoul of all the universes and the master of all universes as well. The second Vishnu incarnation, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, enters into each and every universe, spreads water from his body, and lies down upon that water. From his navel, the stem of a lotus flower grows. Upon that lotus flower, the first creature, Brahma, is born. Within the stem of that lotus flower are the 14 divisions of planetary systems. 14 divisions of planetary systems are in the stem of the lotus flower. Now go figure that one out and get back to me. Which are created by Brahma. Within each universe, the Lord is present as the Garbhodakshay Vishnu. We said that maintains each universe and tends to its needs. Although he is within each material universe, the influence of material energy cannot touch him. Then, the third incarnation of Vishnu is called Kshirodakshay Vishnu. And he lives on the ocean of milk. Milk ocean. And he, again, just like this, only milk ocean. And he is an incarnation of the mode of goodness. And where does he go into? He goes into every single living being. God in the heart. Blade of grass? Yes. Anything that lives, he goes in as the Parama Atma. We have a soul. Soul is also known as Atma. Inside is Atma and Paramatma. Soul, super soul. Living entity and God. Sometimes it's described in the Upanishads. There's one tree, and on this tree sits two birds. Atma, Paramatma. The tree is the body. And one bird is busy enjoying the fruits of the tree. Oh, let me have a look. Oh, what's this? Oh, I wanted to. Guess who that is? That's Atma. Jiva, living being. And the other bird, the Paramatma, is just watching. Just watching. What's he waiting for? He's watching this bird get so busy trying to enjoy all the fruits on the tree until he gets satiated. Enough. No more. Squeeze out every bit of enjoyment you can. And then this guy goes, I can't take this anymore. I'm not happy. I don't want to die. I don't want to get old. And he turns to, oh, where did you come from? Turns to the superstar. Oh, I didn't know you were been here all the time. I didn't hear you. Oh, I've been very quiet. I'm the little voice within, the one you like to ignore because you're busy out there. So there he is. Soul, super soul. Then come the guna avatars. Brahma, you met. Vishnu takes the avatar of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu to maintain the creation. And now we have this third guy, Mahesh, Shiva. So on the right is Brahma. They always depict him with four heads because he's busy. He's got to look in the four directions. A lot going on when you're creating, you know. Haven't you ever said, geez, I wish I had two heads and four arms? Well, he says the same thing. Only he has them. Four heads and four arms. Four arms in that picture. A couple more arms would make it easier. And that's Vishnu in the middle. Vishnu as Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, as Supersoul, maintains everything. Else it would fall apart. And Shiva, there he is with his famous trident, Trishul. And he's on the on your right. Is that right? Yeah, on your right. And Shiva's job is to what?
Wrap
it up. Bring it to an end. Destroy it. We call it autumn. We have nice names for it. Fall. Autumn. We call it winter. That's Shiva's job. Oh no, I don't want it to be destroyed. Why? It's a cycle. It comes, stays for a while, and goes. This is true for everything in the universe. Everything in the material world. Why are you worried? Why do you worry? Why are you afraid? Why are you fearful? You know it will come to an end. Don't worry about that. Only focus on it, what it is right now. Right this minute. This is the joy. This is the blessing. This is what we have. Don't worry about what someday it won't be. No, it won't. Guess what else I'm going to tell you? It'll be dark soon. And sunset is a form of death. And sunrise is, again, creation, maintenance, destruction. Sunrise, high noon, sunset. Right? Every day, same. Tide goes in, tide goes out. So, give me a real solid reason why we should worry. This is all inevitable. And the good deeds will follow you. And the bad news is, the bad deeds will follow you too. All the deeds will follow you. So, Shiva is more or less Vishnu in a different mode. They describe Vishnu and Shiva as milk and yogurt. Milk and yogurt. Yogurt is made from milk. Can you use yogurt in the same way you use milk? No. It's different. But they're essentially the same thing. Milk and yogurt. Vishnu and Shiva. But first there's milk. Then comes yogurt. So, first is Vishnu, then comes Shiva. But there's no conflict. So, questions, comments? There's more so far. Questions, comments? So which creation presentation do you like best so far?
I like yours.
It's not mine.
I like the one you described.
Yeah, you don't like the Big Bang one?
Not really.
Oh.
Not really.
Okay. Now, the Bible one might be okay too, but they don't say very much. You know? There's only a little bit there. Okay, so we talked about guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma is considered to be rajas in the mode rajoguna, passion because he creates. Vishnu is in the material world is to be considered in the mode of sattva, always Vishnu, sattva or shuddha sattva. Sattva means goodness. Because he maintains. When you are cleaning your house and doing repairs, painting your house, looking after your garden, doing your cleaning, etc., which mode is this? That's sattva. You're maintaining everything. If you build a new house, what mode is this? Rajas, yeah, like Brahma. It's creative mode, yeah. And if you tear down your old house, what mode is this? This is Shiva. This is Tamas. It's destructive, but it's not bad destructive, because there's a plan behind it. Yeah. So Vishnu is sattva, Brahma, goodness. Brahma is rajas. And Shiva is tamas. So those are the three gunas. Everything you see in the entire world, you can, if you understand these three modes or gunas, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, if you understand these three gunas, you don't have to take another birth. Punar janma na vidyate. Another birth. It's not necessary. You can go back to Godhead, to the spiritual world, just by understanding this simple point and see how it actually is in effect throughout the world at all times. It takes a lot of worry off the mind too when you understand it. Now, the Manvantara avatars. Chaitanya describes to Sanatana Goswami the Manvantara avatars. He first states, there is no possibility of counting how many there are. In one kalpa, a kalpa is a day of Brahma. When Brahma is alive, the creator, for one day, before his night comes. Because when his night comes, there's a mini withdrawal or a mini annihilation. A mini one, not a maxi. A small one. So, in a kalpa, one day of Brahma, there are 14 manus. Manu. Manu is father of mankind, somebody who is there to create, help to create all the population, all species, not just human. One day of Brahma is calculated to be how long? 4,320,000,000 years. 4,320,000,000 years. And you thought you had good genes for a long life. Maybe you do.
How many years does Brahma live?
I'm reading it right now. Brahma lives for 100 years. On this scale. Okay? One day is 4,320,000,000 years. He lives for 100 years. So 365 times that times 100. So now you know how long our friend Brahma lives. He goes, boy, that went by fast. It seems like it just started. What could I have done? Gone. Time passes quickly when you're having fun. Yeah. So Brahma lives for 100 years. Thus, 14 Manus appear in one day of Brahma. There are 420 Manus during 1 month of Brahma, and during 1 year of Brahma there are 5,040 Manus. These are progenitors of mankind. Since Brahma lives for 100 of his years, it is calculated that there are 504,000 Manus manifest during one lifetime of Brahma. Do you see now where you're fitting into things here? No offense. Do you see how important you are? You see how significant you are? After this, you could never take yourself too seriously. Please. Since there are innumerable universes, no one can even imagine the totality of these Manu or Manvantar incarnations. Because all the universes are produced simultaneously by the exhalation of Mahavishnu, no one can begin to calculate how many Manus are manifest at any one given time. Each Manu, however, is called by a different name. Because we all like to have a different name. We don't like to have the same name. Right? The first Manu is called Swayambhuva. He's the son of Brahma. The second Manu is called Svarochisha. He is the son of the predominating deity of fire. Who is this? Agni. Agnidev. The third Manu is Uttam. He's the son of King Priyavrat. The fourth Manu, Tamas, is the brother of Uttam. The fifth Manu, called Raivat, and the sixth Manu, Chakshusha, are both brothers of Tamasa. And so it goes. Yeah? Now he gets into the wives. And Cain begat Abel, and Abel begat, and so it goes. You know, it goes on and on. Then, the four Yugas. The four ages of the universe, the four seasons of the universe. Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Iron Age. Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. Where are we now? Kali, Iron Age. Yeah. So those take place. And for each of the four yugas, there is a special incarnation of Vishnu called Yuga Avatar. And he comes to to help. We living entities who are always in ignorance, who mistake the body to be the soul. I think we'll leave it there. Questions? Does that give you a sense of creation? It appeals to me because I know that God operates on this level. Because if I can't wrap my mind around it, it's got to be God. You know, I can usually wrap my mind around most things, but not that. It's straightforward. It's sort of easy to understand. At the same time, it boggles the mind. And it, for me, it gives me a sense of satisfaction, of a comfort. Because I know that when you read this, it doesn't matter what these world leaders are doing. And they got this bomb and this weapon and this... They can't do anything. You don't have to worry. God is in charge. Nature is far more powerful than these characters. There's no need to be afraid for that. No need. You know, you keep your eyes focused on divinity, on spirit, on the spirit within you, and everything will unfold as it's meant to. You don't have to worry. That's what this shows us. Because I haven't met any people that talk like this and think like this and can manifest like this. Only God. So it's very pacifying to read that, to know that. Good. Any questions? You want to tell us about one of the millenniums that you lived in beforehand? Or any of you, has anybody a Manu before? Anybody Brahma? Would anybody aspire to be a Brahma? Anybody? Indra? Okay, so anybody have anything to share with us mantra-wise, chanting your mantras? Any good effects? Any experiences? Any stories? Des, you want to tell us about the fairies in our garden? Or
fairies, yeah. Chris, fairies are the nature, aren't they? It's the energy of the world. And, you know, they look after the nature and forests.
But the maintainers, are they?
They're the maintainers, you know. They sort of say, you know, these guys are going around throwing everything and we have to sort it all out and keep the energy of our world, you know, at a certain level, at a certain pace. But, you know, when you walk through a forest or something like that, you feel the energy and you feel a part of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, forests, they vibrate.
Yes.
Around here, everything just goes...
That's right. And, you know, you just feel, you know, at one with your surroundings. Lovely.
I don't say anything, but I can certainly feel it.
Yeah.
Come on, this is a nation of mystics. The Irish are all they're mystics.
There's a lot more coming too, you know, there's a lot more to come from, you know, all these mystics and all the energy. It's just starting at the moment, and something to look forward to.
Yes, well, the Vedas say that we are in the Iron Age, which is a very difficult time. It's the age of hypocrisy, quarrel, manipulation. Of course, we can see this. But within that, there's a golden age that's occurring now. Some think it's been around for the past 500 years. Some think we're just beginning. Some think it's a little bit later. But more or less everybody agrees that there is a golden age within the Iron Age. So there's an opportunity for consciousness to expand now. And a lot more people are aware. Well, the Iron Age lasts for 432,000 years. And we're only 5,000 years into it. So, the Iron Age is like winter of the universe. It's the winter part. And it's just like the four seasons. They just rotate. People are far less interested in spiritual life in the Iron Age. They become rampant materialists in the Iron Age. So the few people who take to spiritual life in the Iron Age, it's actually easier to become self-realized at this point in time, because everything is kind of against it, you know. If you want to know the goals of a society, look at the billboards, look at their advertisements. Those are the goals of the society. And you'll see that the goals are about 99% material. So it doesn't speak of a very high degree of consciousness. In the Satya Yuga, in the Golden Age, the highest buildings were the temples, the spiritual buildings. And then in the Treta Yuga, it was the palaces, because the Kshatriya Dharma was more prominent at that time. Then in Dwapara Yuga, it began to become more about business. Now, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, we are still in the beginning of Kali Yuga, Iron Age, you still see the big business buildings, banks, insurance companies, they are still building the biggest buildings. And as Kali progresses, then more of the lower consciousness rises and becomes more and more powerful. Like Las Vegas, that's a very good example. Las Vegas is the example of Kali Yuga, with the lights and the buildings, and it's all for, and let's get high, let's gamble, let's have fun, we have some sex, and you know, now they have an ad campaign: what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So you can do all your mischief, and no one must tell. That's exactly. Yeah.
How long is the Iron Age going to last?
432,000 years. So there's 427,000 years left. Now, you know you won't live that long. No offense. So, if you want to keep coming back on this planet in your next incarnation or the one after that, guess what? It's not going to get much better over time. Everything starts falling apart. There are many symptoms of the Iron Age where people who have no qualification assume, we've talked about this many times, assume positions they don't deserve. You know, people are in positions of leadership, they couldn't lead beings. They're just in there to get what they can. We've seen this, we see this lots of places. And people who are good people can't make a living doing their dharma. Can't make a living doing what, a living according to using their God-given gifts. they're not able to make a living for themselves, so they have to step down and do something that's on this level when they are actually on this level. This is Kali. That is the nature of it. And you see this many, many places. You know. So, for spiritual life, you can make progress very quickly now. Very rapidly. Because everything is against it. So these are subjects that most people, vast majority of people, are not really interested in. And you see here, and this country is a good example, not only here, people are abandoning the churches. The churches are getting more and more empty. I read not long ago in the Irish newspaper that one of the seminaries that trains priests had a total of 6 men graduating. Mm-hmm. 6. Nationwide. That's not very many. You know. There should be 600, not 6. Or 6,000. I mean, I don't know. A lot more. So, people are going away from... Well, I don't know that they're going away from God. They're going away from religion. That's for sure. This we know. Okay. So, we will do some dhyanam, some meditation now. All right. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe. And let go. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet or your base chakra, and into the earth below. See and feel yourself by means of this light connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. All right. I want you to go into your meditation now. And way off in the distance, there's Mahavishnu lying on the causal ocean. And he's breathing out. He's in his state of mystic sleep and he's breathing out. And see all the universes like golden eggs or golden balls emanating from every pore of his body. Millions upon millions. Now I want you, in your meditation, to lie down like on water, like you're on water, and floating gently on water, calm, gently rocking. And I want you to envision what it is you want to create. Something, one thing you want to create. See it in as much detail as possible. Envision it, visualize it with as much detail. And breathe it into existence. Let it come out of your pores like millions of universes, the same one over and over and over again, the same thing that you are creating, coming out of each and every pore on your body, coming into existence. And see these small universes expanding, getting bigger and bigger, until they all open into one, all together. And that is your creation made manifest. Fully manifest, fully realized in all its dimension and beauty and life and reality and benefit. Its benefit for you and its benefit for everyone else, for all beings. Create your creation. Continue if you wish, and if you are complete, clear your mind, relax, and let go. Returning now to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Eyes whenever you're ready.